Enterprise discovers a mysterious planet.
Dungeons? Curses? Skeletons and Iron Maidens?
Where reality and illusion collide.
They just disappeared.
And nothing.
You find me beautiful.
Is what it seems.
I can be many women.
It's one of the strangest voyages captain and crew have ever known.
Leave or you will all die.
They were saying something about trick or treat.
Star Trek.
Transfer complete.
Welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, vilest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, and I want to suck your blood.
Okay, welcome to our, third annual Halloween episode.
Wow, that's crazy.
Time flies when you're having fun.
What did we tackle in the past, Cam? Of course, Star Trek... best disguises or costumes, you know, when people go incognito, kind of giving people some Halloween costume ideas.
Right.
And then I believe we also tackled Star Trek's scariest aliens.
Right. And we also did, I think in episode 10, creepiest moments in Star Trek. And yeah. We released that in June.
Yeah.
We were dumb.
it was early goings. But I guess altogether we kind of tackled, you know, kind of the scariness in Star Trek and kind of a lot of Halloween themed episodes.
Right.
And so I think... what's the conundrum this week, Cam? Because I'm wondering if there's another way we can tackle this even further.
Right, we're going to call this one, Can Star Trek Be Spooky?
Ooh. Well, I guess we'll be finding out. Essentially, we want to look at a number of episodes that dove into the so-called supernatural.
Right.
Of course, in a science fiction series.
Sure. Like, the idea of, paranormal activity, ghosts and poltergeists, that sort of thing. I don't want to talk about zombie Vulcans or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's more about the idea of the really traditional primal Halloween imagery of, a haunted house, that sort of thing. And Star Trek really did want to kind of dip its toe into that, pond every now and again. But let's talk about if it really worked. So why don't we kind of go through chronologically and look at how each series... I mean, not every series made many stabs at it whatsoever, but let's kind of look at the examples that really stand out.
Yeah.
And why don't we start with the original series? Now, Tyler, I assigned you to watch a pair of classic episodes, but let's start with probably the most important... maybe the most important episode in this entire show, which was intended as a Halloween episode, and that is Cat's Paw.
It was something all right. I mean, obviously, the crew beam down onto a planet where they encounter a haunted castle.
Right.
And essentially, it's them finding themselves in spooky situations, hanging from dungeons, what have you. And you find out it's really just aliens that have the power to kill you with their minds,
right,
essentially, that are behind all this. So, obviously, you literally have a black cat, prowling throughout the corridors of this haunted mansion. So it's very on the nose that it was supposed to be a Halloween episode. Cam, the reputation of this one preceded it when I had seen it. But you weren't so familiar with kind of the lore of Star Trek when you first dove in and watched it. What did you initially think when you saw that Star Trek was going to try to get spooky?
I remember when I was watching the original series, what I would do was, after a finished episode, I would watch the trailer for the next episode, because the way that series jumps around genres and everything, it was always really exciting to see what the next one would be, because you're like, wow, that's completely different.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the trailer for this one, for Cat's Paw, and being like, wow, cool, Star Trek Halloween episode. And it has a real kind of mood of the Hammer horror films of the 60s and 70s, and so it just looked kind of cool. And I watched it, and it was bonkers. Really,
yes.
Really strange.
The strangest part is the assistant engineer who was running the bridge the entire episode. He could have obviously taken over as, say, Frankenstein's monster with the amount of personality that fella had. Was it Captain DeSalle? Lieutenant DeSalle?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. There you go.
I mean, this was the third time I'd watched this episode for doing research, and it's an episode that... I don't think it's a good episode of Star Trek.
Not one you would recommend to a newbie.
No, but it's one that I find the every time I watch it, I kind of appreciate just how strange it is more. Like, it's not, you know, an episode that's, like, just disposable and boring. It's, like, it is weird.
Well, okay, and so this is the question I'm going to be asking from a lot of these episodes tonight. But, like, did it succeed on what it set out to do, essentially? And I, throughout watching this episode, I kept asking what exactly was it trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
It was a very schizophrenic sort of episode, very much like how the Thaw from Voyager is a very schizophrenic sort of episode where you're never quite sure what the theme is or who even like the main character is supposed to be or what the mission's all about. So this one, I honestly, for the first like 15 minutes of it, I was kind of with it. I was like, okay, they want to go in a bonkers direction. There's literally a black cat like jumping out and about there.
And I think the three witches at the start of the episode are actually really effective. Like, it is creepy.
You know, I initially saw them and I chuckled. I was just like, oh, they're going full throttle with it. Like, they seem committed to this whole idea with, as you said, the witches, the whole kind of goose. There's literally spooky voice, Captain Kirk, you know, like that sort of stuff there.
Do you think it was a missed opportunity to not have a ghost?
I don't know if this episode would have been salvaged by the appearance of a ghost.
I'm not saying it's salvaged by a ghost, but, you know, it's the idea is these aliens, the ornithoids, are tapping into, like, the subconscious of the crew of, like, sort of these primal terrors.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think the crew's really terrified of black cats?
different days, you know. But what I would have been far more interested in is Spock's, you know, subconscious know, terrors. And we didn't really see any of that.
It just would have been Sarah casting disapproving glances in
no
his
kidding.
Direction.
It would have just been a giant cocked eyebrow throughout the entire episode, you know. One of the other things is, did you, I thought this episode was more effective at making believe that there was danger on this planet than one of the other episodes that we have recently viewed, Spectre of a Gun, which featured Chekhov dying about halfway through, which simply telegraphed to me that there's the crew's really in no danger.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this instance, it starts off with, I believe it was one crew member, a red shirt, who's actually, I don't believe, was wearing red, you know.
Right.
But he dies almost immediately, like, and so that signaled to me, okay, well, there is imminent danger for the crew if they stick around here.
Right.
So that, you know, made it a little spookier for me.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I often have thought about this episode that I think one of its biggest problems is it gets very talky. Once they introduce the two aliens, Sylvia and Korob, we just get these long scenes of them essentially having, like, James Bond dinners where they're sitting them down and just talking.
Yes.
And I really wonder how much more effective this episode would have been if they'd kept sort of the primal scares going at least half the episode before they reveal them. Like, they make that a reveal that it's aliens behind it. Like, make them think that they are stuck on, like, a haunted planet or something.
Yeah, I think that would have been better because they really kind of got rid of the whole conceit of the story much earlier on than I would have liked. What do you think about the overall story? Beyond the whole spookiness, how does this work as a Star Trek episode when you're dealing with, like, these aliens that are revealed at the very end? What are they exactly? Like, dodo birds?
Rod puppets?
Yeah, I don't know exactly.
I like them, though. It's so weird.
Yeah, it is, you know. I kind of think that it is ultimately a very Star Trek-y sort of story being told here. I don't know if it's being told very effectively, though.
No, and it was written by Robert Bloch, and he based it on his short story, The Broomstick Ride. And we'll talk about another episode he wrote coming up, but he, I think, has a good idea. Like, I think there's a very good idea that's executed throughout. Like, we talked about Spectre of the Gun last week when we did our Westerns episode, about how the sci-fi premise of that episode wasn't really revealed until the end. It was kind of the mind over matter. Oh, by the way, that's what this is about. Here, I think the idea of, you know, aliens using people's subconscious terrors against them and trying to gain power over them, like, that's, as much as it's talky, and I don't think it's an episode anyone would hold up as their favorite, it's consistent throughout the hour. And we ultimately see that they are these tiny little puppets. Like, that's what they have to use to overpower these people.
Yes.
I'm not sure how I feel about the character of Sylvia, who is this, you know, it's this rod puppet that's in the persona of a human woman, essentially, but is basically become addicted to sort of the sensations of being human. I don't know if that belonged in this episode.
Well, I don't know. To me, that didn't strike me as, like, the issue with mm-hmm. this episode, though. I thought she was decent. You know, the problem I felt, though, is, like, I didn't feel as if it committed enough to what the central conceit of the episode was. And I think it just kind of dragged and just wandered off in other directions. And I think maybe if Sylvia had been presented as a far more focused sort of character,
right,
then I think that maybe would have addressed some of the criticisms that you have of this character.
Yeah, and I just... And the character of Korob, I'm just like, what is this dude's, like, problem? Is he, like, really, like, underpowered or something?
Well, yeah, I didn't understand that. Like, maybe Sylvia's just that much more powerful than him. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why he needs to get the crew to gang up on her.
Right.
You know, it struck me as kind of strange. How much do you think there was a marketing effort to sell those Enterprise pendants after this episode aired?
They're pretty cool. I would probably buy one.
How much would you be willing to spend,
Max? Not much. I'm a very poor man.
Okay. But Max?
I'm a podcaster. I have no money. Okay. I got podcasting dollars. But I would also be willing to buy one of those little, like, if you could get me, like, a little model of the rod puppet things at the end, that would be pretty cool, too.
Okay.
I thought it was weird, though, because Korob dies in the episode, but then at the end, his rod puppet is moving.
Yeah.
And then dies again.
I never thought about it that way.
And I never really could figure that out.
Well, that's spooky, Cam.
So when we talk about the idea of supernatural activity or, you know, the paranormal in Star Trek, do you think that the concept of the paranormal is done well in this episode?
I mean, we do have Kirk making references to trick or treat.
Yeah.
He's carrying around a magic wand a lot. No, I would have to say no. Because I think that there's something psychological about the supernatural, like, that gets underneath your skin in a way that this didn't. This seemed very surface-level examination of what's supernatural and spooky. What about you, Cam?
I kind of feel the same way. I think, as I said before, had they held off the reveal of the Ornithoids a lot longer, they could have built more into, like, the supernatural right. mythology and gone for more scares. I think as soon as, you know, literally as soon as Korob, I believe he shows up first, is out there, you know, with his wand, boom, all the scares are gone.
Yes.
You are never scared again. And, you know, they kind of try to go back to the well at the end of the episode when there's, you know, Sylvia in the form of this giant cat running around. You're not scared because you know it's Sylvia.
Yeah.
Like, there's just nothing that hits that primal chord the way that it needs to. So I think, I mean, Cat's Paw is an episode that has a real distinction for being, I think, among the worst episodes of the original series.
Okay.
I don't know that I'd agree with that. I think it's too interesting and original to fall in that category. I mean, there is no other Star Trek episode like it.
Yeah, to me, when I was watching it, I this is actually my first... I was aware of the episode. I was familiar with it. This mm-hmm. is my first time actually watching it, and it didn't strike me as, like, an unwatchable mess that I had to recoil from. So I don't know if it really deserved maybe the reputation that it has among fans.
Right.
Itself. Although, let's go back to DeSaul for a second, because that, that character, he never shows up again, does he?
No.
I can't imagine why. Here's my I had to jot this quote down when he gave it. It tells you exactly why I never need to see. He seems like a character from another series, but here goes the quote. "I bet you credit to Navy Beans we can put a dent in it." Of course, he's talking about that field that envelops the Enterprise. Who speaks like that, Cam?
Sure, yeah, that's quite true.
Okay.
I didn't hate him as much as maybe you did. I appreciate that he was at least competent. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of other episodes where they leave someone in charge of the Enterprise, and it's just like a complete gong show.
Yeah.
He's a little terse. I don't know that he seems like the most pleasant of captains. But I appreciated that he was at least capable of doing his job.
My preference, though, is if... Like, Uhura was, like, the only bridge officer left at that point. Why can't they just give it to her? I realize it for dramatic effect. It's better to have a little bit of conflict on the bridge between Uhura, Chekhov, as well as T'Sol. But to me, it would have been more meaningful if Uhura got that captain's chair for once.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. That would have been cool.
Okay, Cam, what's our next bundle of joy that we've got to examine here.
Well, let's jump over from one Robert Block episode to another of the original series. Let's talk about Wolf in the Fold.
I know you've been telling me this is your favorite episode for a long, long time.
You know, me and feminists agree that Wolf in the Fold is the greatest episode of the original series.
Yeah, this is a very, very contentious episode, and I think its reputation is well-deserved. I think this would qualify more as one of the worst episodes of Star Trek than, say, Catspaw. I thought this was very difficult to watch, and I thought it was just stupid. Like, I thought this episode was dumb. But essentially, this starts off on a planet for prostitutes, essentially. A lot of nudge-nudge, wink-wink going on.
I mean, it's kind of like an early version, and definitely a filthier version of, like, what Risa would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But essentially, it starts off with Scotty, he has a concussion that makes him hate women, and so he needs a prostitute, and 5 minutes later, there's the Kirk and McCoy wandering through this foggy alley of death, and Scotty's carrying a dagger after a woman's just been stabbed many, many times. This prostitute, who apparently has worked for her father since she was 12? And has a fiance who has his hands, you know, slapped by the administrator or the prefect because he was jealous that she sleeps with other men.
Okay, now I'm going to take a little sidebar here because I feel like this is my perfect opportunity. Okay. I want to talk a bit about Robert Block.
Okay.
Robert Block, he was a very famous novelist. He did write a lot of TV, but he's most known for writing the novel Psycho.
Right.
And you can look at that novel and say, I wonder if Robert Block has maybe some issues with women.
I've never read the novel, but I know that.
I actually read it for this podcast.
Oh, okay. How long was it?
It's like 100, or it's about 200 pages maybe. Very big print, too.
Well, that's dedication, folks.
That's right, that's right. No War and Peace for me. But the book is far more, like, say, woman-hating than the movie.
Okay.
It's much more, the book is really written from a lot of Norman Bates' internal monologue. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it's him just like ranting about his hatred of women. And so a lot of that, to me, like when I see Wolf in the Fold, I can see a lot of the connections between Robert Block's other work, at least in terms of Psycho.
Then I guess it doesn't surprise me that we end up with an episode like this.
Yeah, like this to me feels almost like, because Psycho was, you know, a pretty big sensation in 1959. They make the movie in 1960. And then Star Trek's hiring Robert Block, you know, shortly after. And he is known for writing these kind of very dark and twisted stories. And we get essentially probably the two most dark and twisted stories of the original series.
You know, when we go into, like, the whole concept of women hating, a lot of it has to do with kind of this over-sexualization of women, and we definitely see that with this pleasure planet that we land on here, where it's essentially a planet of, like, prostitution, which, I don't know, it bothers me, of course, just how much it seems as Kirk gets, he knows the area quite well, you know, as does McCoy, you know. It seems as if this Robert Block fella has a need of a therapy session or two.
He was a big Pulp Fiction writer too, so like a lot of his material is very lurid, and this was also loosely based on another one of his stories called Yours Truly, Jack the Ripper.
Well, we should mention that the whole reason this is a supernatural episode, is we find out that there's like this entity that can possess bodies and make them murder women. A lot of them, and one of which, back in the day, was known as Jack Ripper. Like, this entity had possessed, they seem to indicate it had possessed multiple men in London and forced them to commit these murders at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this episode, I agree with you, it's stupid.
Yes.
Like, it's a really dumb premise for a Star Trek episode. I don't know, maybe it would have been better for, like, Kolchak the Night Stalker or something like that, years later, I don't know. You know, something more, like, Cat's Paw makes sense to me as a Star Trek episode. This does not. Like, Star Trek to me is never ugly. I mean, it shouldn't be really ugly. And this has, like, multiple stabbings. Like, multiple women getting stabbed.
Yeah.
You know, people standing with, like, bloody knives. And to me, Star Trek is not bloody knives and dead women. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of crosses a line. into something that's far more disturbing.
I agree. What about the effectiveness of the so-called spooky factor? Do you think this is a spookier seeming episode than Cat's Paw?
I don't think so. Like, I think, you know, the witch scene alone outdoes anything in Wolf in the Fold.
Okay.
I just don't get anything scary out of this. To me, it becomes... It's more of, I guess, a mystery as to what's going on, but it also wants to trade in, like, sort of that ghosts and paranormal activity type trope, but it doesn't really support it, because to me, I would be very curious to talk to a viewer who watched this episode in 1967 to hear their take, because
sure,
a modern take on this episode, right off the bat, like in the first, what, 3-4 minutes when they're like, Scotty has an irrational, you know, resentment towards women now. It's like, you're like, what? Is he mentally ill?
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with Scotty?
Or also, them, like, clapping for all the female dancers, and Kirk has to explain, oh, I've been here enough times. You have to push the light. It's just like, I don't know. This episode gives me the willies.
Well, just kind of going back to sort of the proto Ryza idea. To me, like, Ryza feels very much of a construction of the 80s.
Yes.
This feels like a construction of, like, 1960s sailors, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
Star Trek pulling into fleet, they're going to this type of pleasure planet if it's made in the 60s, right?
If there's one redeemable thing from this episode, though, I have to say it's the stunt double who was there as Hingis, who was wearing a bald cap, obviously, and... I do like the fact that Shatner let the guy kick him right in the chest, bounced off the bulkhead. But, you know, other than that, I really don't... There are a few episodes of Star Trek that I don't think are redeemable, or at least there's not at least some elements in there that are redeemable. But, Cam, is there really much in this episode that it has going for it?
The only thing I would actually say it has going for it is art direction. I actually think sort of, you know, the foggy... sort of foreboding look, and even like the, you know, the dance parlor or whatever the heck it is. The art direction is really well done. Like, those people did not phone it in.
I 100% agree with you on that. Like, I actually do recall watching this episode thinking, oh, you know, that looks... I've been thinking a lot about lately about how I want Star Trek Discovery to look.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope that they look towards like an updated kind of retro look from the 60s. That's just... I need that... Those bright colors and that vibrancy that we have so much of it in the original series, even in like really, really poor episodes like this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how did you think this was even for a showcase for Jimmy Doohan?
Okay, you know, okay. You can tell I'm torn. I think it's good. Hey, you can put an episode, you can give Jimmy Doohan crap.
Yeah.
And he's still capable of carrying an episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but beyond that, I just really think this is a flaming pile of garbage.
Yeah.
It really is. I think this is perhaps one of the worst episodes of Star Trek, period.
Of the original series or just general?
I'd say just in general, because we've spoken about it before. When we talk about, like bad Star Trek episodes, a lot of what gets, you know, called out by fans are just episodes I'd call, like, forgettable or mediocre. The stuff that really bugs me that I think are bad Star Trek episodes are things that betray the characters. Like, right. When the writers betray the characters. And I think this seemed just kind of a big betrayal, and just also just a betrayal of the audience intelligence here.
Right.
And I think even in the 1960s, people must have been scratching their heads about how you get concussions and you hate women all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's very strange. And it's bizarre to me that Jimmy Doohan references this episode in Relics when he appears in TNG.
What, does he?
Yeah, he refers to, like, being on among the Argelians and having a wee bit of trouble. Like, those wacky good times with Scotty and, you know, those poor women who are now in a grave.
Oh, God.
Like, it's just really dark. One final note, on general, on the psycho connection between Star Trek, which I think is really interesting, is, you know, Robert Block does these two kind of famous or infamous episodes, depending on how you look at it. But the psycho connection doesn't end there. Joseph Stefano, who wrote the screenplay, adapted Psycho for the big screen, also wrote a fairly notorious Star Trek episode. He, for TNG, wrote Skin of Evil.
Wow.
So, you know, the man who had Marion Crane, you know, getting killed early in the motion picture Psycho, has Tasha Yar killed kind of out of nowhere in Skin of Evil. Very odd connections.
Very odd connections there. Yeah. We don't need him as a guest on the podcast, I can tell you that.
We do not. So let's move into TNG, speaking of.
Yes.
And TNG, not a big outlet for supernatural or paranormal activity.
Praise the Lord. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, you get like creepy things like schisms or phantasms, but nothing that really is going for supernatural atmosphere.
But I think maybe one episode, one of our favorite episodes, actually stands out there.
Yeah.
And look, if listeners have not had the pleasure of watching this one, go back and listen to our Valentine's Day episode, tackling the weirdest relationships in Star Trek. And give another watch to Sub Rosa, which of course features Crusher falling in love with her ancestral family candle.
Right. Well, that'll happen.
Yeah. No, essentially, she lights a candle up after her grandmother dies on a planet, and her grandmother's lover appears, a very young, handsome man, and essentially tries to control Beverly, and it's very much based on Gothic literature,
right.
A lot of those elements written by Jerry Taylor. You and I think this is a very derided episode among fans.
Yeah.
But Cam, I think you love this, and I love this, just like, it's entertaining. It is not a boring episode. There's a lot going on here.
No, it's one like that kind of like Cat's Paw is too strange to be truly terrible. Like, there's something about it that, look, you know, say what you will about how good an episode of Star Trek it is. They went for it.
Oh, well, okay, you even bring up art direction.
Yeah.
You're in, like, a recreation of Scotland on another planet.
Right.
Just that sort of stuff. But story elements like that include anything from, like, a zombie grandmother climbing out of her grave and shooting Geordi and Data with lightning bolts.
Right.
You know, you've got me there at this point. But okay, let's talk about it from the perspective of it being successful, of being, like, just a piece of an example of, like, Gothic fiction.
Right.
Do you see where they're going? Are they successful at doing that, though?
They know the notes, but not the music.
I agree,
it's kind of my take on it. Because, you know, classic Gothic literature, traditionally the supernatural tends to warn more about, like, an earthly evil. They tend to be actually on your side a lot of the time. You know, you watch a movie like Crimson Peak, that's actually a really good example of a modern, you know, film doing the Gothic properly. This just kind of wants the, you know, sort of the imagery and the iconography of Gothic lit, without quite committing to the overall thematic ideas of Gothic lit.
Yeah.
Now, it's not bad in that regard. Like, it's entertaining and kind of trashy. But I think it's interesting that it's the TNG's really sole stab at doing, you know, unabashed, like, you know, ghosts and supernatural type storytelling. And I just wonder, like, why? Why was that the only time they ever attempted it?
I really think this episode's coming in season 7. There must have been some sort of mandate where they're like, guys, we don't want to go down that path. If there's anything suggesting supernatural stuff, there's a big risk it could get really silly. And I just wonder if maybe Michael Piller, you know, quashed a lot of these ideas in the writer's room back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And look, if this is end results, I guess I can understand why they didn't really go for those stories. But I have to say, you were really alluding to it earlier, if you look at Gates McFadden's performance, if you look at Jonathan Frakes' directing, they go full throttle here. Like, they are committed to this entire idea. Just whether, I think, you know, maybe the issue here is more just the script. And there's a lot of silliness going on in the script here. Essentially, it's another cloud monster trying to ensure that he has life force to, you know, suck out of the Howard women for eternity.
Right, and how do you feel about that? You know, because we really see this also in Wolf in the Fold. The idea of Star Trek has a chronic tendency and obsession with having to explain everything scientifically.
Sure.
And so, you know, they keep telling us, you know, this is an anaphasic life form. sure. You know, it's, you know, an alien life form, essentially.
Yeah.
How do you feel this impacts the idea of doing a supernatural story? As soon as you're having characters use technobabble to explain it, like, does that rob it of sort of that primal terror?
I don't think it should. I don't think it should. I just don't know if the writers have a good track record of ensuring that it does not. I really think that they can hit those notes, as you say. I think they can totally hit those notes. and have a scientific explanation behind it while still making it, like, psychologically frightening.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that it is possible. I just don't think anyone's quite succeeded up until this point here.
I don't know. I kind of have an issue with, like, the idea of sort of the supernatural as the unexplained, you know, things we can't quite wrap our heads around.
Sure.
But when you have characters just saying, well, there's anaphasic energy around, you know, it's an anaphasic life form that uses that does this and this and this, I kind of lose my... It just doesn't have that mystery to me, or, you know, that sense of kind of pulling me in, making me think about what it could possibly be. It doesn't have the suggestion.
But what if they never come up with a scientific, you know, basis for it, and it's a literal just ghost story. There are right. literally ghosts walking around the ship. Would that not bother you even more than what we do end up with?
Well, I think it might be a more successful, you know, say, horror episode.
Yeah.
But it might not be a successful Star Trek episode.
Okay.
Because, you know, again, Star Trek has to explain things scientifically.
Yeah.
You know, it's a science vessel.
Well, Cam, is Sub Rosa a spooky episode to you?
Oh, boy. I think I'd rather watch Cat's Paw.
Okay.
But it's okay. Like, it's definitely better than Wolf in the Fold. It definitely has imagery that is effective. But... it's not one of my favorites. It's not like, when I think of like a true like Halloween sort of scary episode, I don't think Sub Rosa. Sure. Sub Rosa is more of like the bodice ripper, you know.
Oh yeah.
The Harlequin romance type idea, you know, with Ronan the bear. Yeah.
Yeah.
he's quite a man.
Yeah. You know, I think there are sequences in this. I'm thinking about maybe the end of the episode, especially that they do go for that spookiness. Mm-hmm. I would rather watch Sub Rosa again over Cat's Paw or Wolf in the Fold, if only because I find this like infinitely entertaining by just how this is really campy. This is about as campy as Next Gen gets in its, you know, seasons 3 and up, essentially.
Yeah, Masks is up there too, but yeah, definitely.
So I'm entertained. I would give this a watch again myself.
Do you think TNG missed the ball a bit by not maybe delving into supernatural storytelling at other points? Maybe when they had a better team of writers, you know, pre-Season 7.
Well, you know what? To me, this is something that I always say on the show, but it's not so much the concept as it is the execution.
Right.
You know, they could have had some good concepts, but if this is how it's being executed eventually, then I'm glad they did stay away. I don't know if they're... I've yet to see proof that we're missing out on all these amazing, spooky, supernatural stories that TNG could have offered.
Right.
I just don't see it there.
Right.
For what we have. Well, Cam, if we go towards another series, of course, Deep Space Nine, I don't know if you'd say that supernatural spookiness is like a big element of it, but there is
an overall theme.
Yes, I think we have to address this head on because there's no way around it. The prophets, the Paul Wraiths, the all this Bajoran religious stuff, like where it goes into... You know, I think a lot of the focus is on talk about how it's about gods and mm-hmm. that, but they really do go for these kind of almost paranormal elements throughout this series that we don't really see anywhere else in Star Trek.
No, and the Paar Wraiths are actually a really interesting example because, you know, they're first introduced in the episode The Assignment, but they're introduced through, like, Odo basically has told Jake, like, ghost stories about the Paar Wraiths. So they're introduced with sort of an air of supernatural just by mentioning them in that light. Like, and originally they were actually, Robert Hewitt Wolf came up with the idea of the Paar Wraiths in season 1 for the episode The Negus.
Okay.
And it was a line in the script where Sisko and Jake had visited the fire caves and the Paar Wraiths were like kind of like the ghost story and they were like goblins that lived in the fire caves. And 5 seasons, 6 seasons later, they kind of decided to revisit the concept and rewrote it, essentially. They were no longer goblins. They were these rejected wormhole aliens and, you know, wound up in the fire cave. So very odd that it was kind of like a early unformed idea that was kind of cut and then revisited.
I can't imagine why.
I gotta say, I watched The Assignment for research for this episode. I think that's a pretty enjoyable episode, actually. And this is, of course, the episode where Keiko O'Brien, who's, you know, doing an expedition in the fire caves, comes back possessed.
Yes.
I think this episode, because there is another episode called The Reckoning where Jake Sisko is possessed.
Yes.
I think if you watch these two side by side, you can actually see how one does it really well and one does it horrifically badly.
Okay, it's been a while since I've seen the assignments. It's probably been like 8 years.
Right.
I don't remember it being a very good episode, though.
I'm not saying it's a great episode, but what I like about the assignment is it has that sort of level of psychological terror. It's kind of like the stranger sleeping beside you idea with Miles O'Brien, where, you know, Cake O'Brien isn't levitating and shooting firebolts or what have you, kind of like Jake Sisko is later down the road. But she's just like, no one realizes it's an imposter. She's taken over the body of Keiko and threatening to destroy it, essentially, and forcing Miles to go about, you know, realigning the station to create like a beam that's going to shoot the wormhole. Now that stuff gets a little goofy for sure, but what I liked is sort of the more unsettling aspects of someone who's taken over a loved one's body and is threatening you by saying, like, I'm going to, like, stop her heart.
Right.
And yeah. I think Miles, like, I think Cole Meany actually does a really good job in this episode showing constant tension and, you know, anxiety over this in scenes where he has to behave normally.
Yeah, and, you know, I did forget about that particular threat, that I think it is effective.
Mm-hmm.
How would you rank the supernatural elements of this, though?
That is the interesting part. I don't think the Paw race, at this point, they'd figured out were quite as supernatural as they ultimately wound up being.
Yeah.
And so they don't feel supernatural in this episode.
They just feel more like kind of aliens taking possession of Keiko.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. It isn't until they come back and we see, you know, possessed Jake Sisko on the...
He's taken over Grandma Howard's powers from Sub Rosa. He can shoot lightning bolts from his... Yeah.
And that to me is where they've really become supernatural.
Okay.
And boy, the Paw race. I kind of like the idea of the Paw race. I like the idea of these aliens who've been rejected from the wormhole. Because it, you know, has sort of the heaven and hell, you know, idea where they're in the fire caves and then the other ones are in kind of this beacon of light that is the wormhole. To me, what I don't like about the Paw race though is the way they are employed in the story, like, I just don't feel like they ever found a way to utilize them in a way that added to the series, really.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up that you kind of like that duality that they represent between them and the prophets, but to me, it's such a Western viewpoint, like, this right. idea of duality, which is not so present in, like, other cultures, and especially if we're talking about aliens. I would have been okay if there was more shades of gray. And because the thing is that...
You're talking about Riker having flashbacks?
Oh, believe me, I want Shades of Grey Part 2 in Star Trek Discovery.
Sure.
But I would be okay... Look, the Prophets were a very aloof sort of species.
Right.
I would have been okay if the motives of the Paw race were not as so well-defined as they were. And I can understand their motives. Like, look, they want to, you know, get out of these fire caves and they're using Dakot as a vessel mm-hmm. later on in the series. Does it seem more sci-fi to you or more supernatural to you? Because I do recall one of the big complaints as audiences at the time saw that the Paw Wraiths were becoming more prominent is like, is Star Trek Deep Space Nine really coming down to like a magic book, the Coast Emojin?
Yeah, and I think that is the biggest issue. I think there's essentially a scientific basis for the wormhole aliens that is explained and explored throughout 7 seasons. The Paw Wraiths show up kind of late. Obviously, in the Keiko O'Brien episode, The Assignment, they're not quite what they're going to be. When they do show up later, it becomes magic. Like, it becomes
yes.
Indiana Jones. You know, the death of Kai Winn and Gul Dukat in the finale, in the fire caves, is very Indiana Jones. And it has that whole, like, you know, Wrath of God idea, which makes sense if you're going to, you know, having Sisko the prophet and all this. It ties into the overall idea of sort of gods within the series, but it feels magical as opposed to where the wormhoilians don't.
Yeah, it what gets me every time though is in Star Trek, there are sequences where characters are reading words out of a book and the words start to glow, and I'm just like, it looks like magic. It looks like I'm watching a proto Harry Potter or some such, as opposed to a science fiction series. And so I don't think the Paw race are that effective at getting these supernatural, spooky stories going the way that I would hope.
No, and I mean, The Reckoning is the one that really stands out to me, the one with Jake Sisko walking around possessed, and that feels like Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
I remember watching that episode and being like, oh my god.
Ghostbusters answered the call?
I'm not afraid.
I'm not afraid.
And so it just feels more like, to me, like comic booky.
Yeah.
So I just feel like you either have to go either more scientific with it, like they need to be introduced earlier than they are and dealt with more complexity and explained more, or B, make them a hell of a lot scarier.
Yeah.
Like more of like an evil, unstoppable force, because they don't feel like either.
No, because even like when Dekat was being possessed by them and, you know, they had the ability to turn him back into a Cardassian, you know, and he was getting like red contact lenses in. To me, I was just like, oh, this is just turning into a magic show.
Yeah, it's kind of like Steven Dorff at the end of Blade, where he has like the red contacts and you're like, is this it? Is it the big show? Well, okay, sure.
So, okay. For me, I gave a thumbs down to the Paw Wraiths being good examples of Star Trek getting spooky.
And yet, I kind of have to admire Deep Space Nine for being willing to kind of go down a more supernatural route in that regard. I just wish, you know, the series did so many things so well. It's a bummer that they didn't pull this off, because it's not a concept you would see, especially explored in the depth it should be on Deep Space Nine in any other series.
Yeah, and I don't think we should expect to have a return of the Paw Wraiths or something similar in Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting just reading up on Paw Wraiths, as I like to do. There was talk about how, I'm sure a spinoff novel or whatever just had introduced a third breed of wormhole aliens, and I didn't read that much about them. I just think it's interesting if they maybe introduced more different types of wormhole aliens that were in different areas.
Well, you better get started on that cam fiction.
Yeah, sure. Right. I just think it's an interesting idea, because it maybe adds a little bit of complexity in, as opposed to just, as you said, the light and the dark.
Okay.
You know?
Well, for me, you know, we're not always super reverent towards Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah.
But if we're looking at, like, episodes introducing kind of these paranormal elements with a sci-fi backdrop, I do think that The Haunting of Deck 12 was actually kind of effective in this regard.
I agree.
Okay. I'm glad we're on the same page here, because there's a lot of research involved for this week's podcast, and I'm glad at least one did the job here.
Yeah. Well, it seems like Star Trek, I like to think, you know, the three writers of this episode, Brian Fuller, Mike Sussman, and Kenneth Biller, maybe watched like Cat's Paw, maybe, you know, Wolf in the Fold, and, you know, in research, or kind of like, how Star Trek always dropped the ball in these type of supernatural stories? And I think they came up with a genius idea for Haunting of Deck 12, which is make it all ambiguous and with a unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
In Neelix, because ultimately, the takeaway is what you want it to be, essentially.
I love how the whole issue is over the Bissard collectors, and that's how we know it's an unreliable narrator. But essentially, look, we have this kind of nebula alien that gets trapped in Voyager, and it's up to Voyager to drop him off in a convenient sort of habitat once again. And so at the time, you know, the ship has to power down, and the Borg children. Oh, I forgot all about those Borg children.
Those precious, precious Borg children. Yeah.
Well, Neelix has to take care of them, and he tells essentially campfire stories about how this entity came to be on the ship. And I actually do think it's like a good episode for not only Neelix, but for Janeway as well, just showing her dedication to the ship. Neelix talked about the alien calling Janeway's bluff when it comes to her willingness to die rather than just take commands from this alien.
Yeah.
I think Janeway was willing to go out guns a-blazing, as opposed to letting this alien dictate how to operate the ship.
Yeah, and I love the way it communicates through the computer with her. Like, that's a really cool idea, and it's actually pulled off really well.
Well, because we have such this idea of if it's one of those non-corporeal aliens or a gaseous being, it'll just take possession of another humanoid life form and communicate directly that way.
Right.
It doesn't happen this episode. We have it like trying to get into the computer systems, doing all these wonky things like taking people down the turbo lift really fast, opening and closing doors, shutting down corridors, making force fields go here or there. And then, of course, Cam, as you say, like getting control of the communication system and communicating through a computer in the best way that it can figure out how to, being an alien and all. So, I don't know. To me, it was kind of an intriguing episode.
And it kind of reminded me like a good version of, do you remember the season one X-Files episode, Ghost in the Machine?
No.
It's sort of a similar idea where like a ghost or whatever supernatural being takes over like all these various electronics and the computer systems and so forth. And it's a really boring episode. It's, you know, up there with like Space, the NASA episode of X-Files, where it's just like, oh, it's a slog to get through. But like this is like a good version of that, where what I liked actually about it is something that I kind of complained about in Sub Rosa, which is that this life form, because of the fact it's told in a ghost story from Neelix, we never get it fully explained.
Yeah, actually, and I did not pick up on that until like towards the very end of the episode, and I think that was actually because I kept kind of waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, well they're going to explain the whole dealio eventually, and we're just like, no, it's Neelix. He doesn't understand how the Bussard collectors work. How would he be able to explain this to the Borg children?
Right.
You know. So I thought that was a very, very effective thing, and I think if we ever tackle the supernatural elements again in Star Trek Discovery, I think you kind of need one of those elements where maybe you have to leave it to the viewers somehow to figure out exactly what happened. I don't think ambiguity is such a bad thing.
No, I actually think that's one of the great triumphs of this episode is how ambiguous it is.
I like that because I think one of the faults of Voyager is that sometimes they'd really dumb it down a lot of the time.
Sure.
And, like, just a lot of exposition. I'm just like, get it, but...
And I think if you're going to make, like, a spooky Star Trek episode, you want it to be ambiguous. Because it's up to sort of the person's mind to fill in the blanks as to what they want to take away from it. And I think that's maybe what, at least for me especially, fails, like, say, like Cat's Paw or Wolf in the Fold, is that they really have to explain what is going on. And, you know, because of the fact it's not presented through an unreliable narrator, it's like we got to have the explanation at the end and wrap it all up. In this version, you get to have Neelix's story, but there's the question of, like, you know, this swirled in the nebula at the end of the episode. Was that, you know, the quote-unquote ghost on Deck 12?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe. It's ultimately up to the viewer to decide, and I think that's a real strength of this episode, and I'm actually kind of shocked that Voyager was willing to let the audience make that up for themselves, considering its history.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about Neelix as the main character for this episode? Did you find him a little grating as the episode progressed?
Yes. Oh, this episode? he's fine. I think you actually need Neelix to do this episode. This is a perfect Neelix episode because he has a certain childlike mentality. And I think the idea of ghost stories is something that makes sense coming from him.
I agree that I think you need Neelix as the main character of this episode. But the fact that he wanted drapes installed in the windows because he was afraid of being in a nebula...
Yeah.
And no disrespect to Ethan Phillips, who I think is a very good actor, but I think Ethan Phillips is going a little too over the top with his performance there. I was just like, oh my god, is this guy the biggest wuss in the world?
Yeah.
Like, Neelix has seen far worse than a nebula.
True. Well, this is well into the point where, like, Neelix gets he just seems more like a child character.
Yeah.
Which is not the case, like, early on in, like, Jatrell, where he's talking about, like, seeing all these people wiped out.
Yeah.
You know, his entire, like, half his planet wiped out. So, at this point, he's in full kind of, like, infant man mode.
Yes.
And I think it works for this episode, because I think that's the sort of storyteller you need to kind of tell this poltergeist in space story. I mean, imagine if we'd had this episode, like, presented by Chakotay.
Well, there'd be a lot of spirit guides featured.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it would just not have the energy. It wouldn't kind of have the wonder to it. Like,
no.
He's, like, really wrapped up in the telling of the story, and I think the whole script benefits from that.
Yeah.
I think the only other character who might get away with it would be Tom Paris.
I could see that, just because he's all like, hey, this reminds me of all those movies from the 20th century.
He has a flair for the dramatic.
Yeah.
Something few characters have on Voyager.
I agree. Well, so Cam, just as we wrap up here, we've got some, some viewer mail, so to speak. We've got some special guests that we were able to meet up with and share their top picks for Halloween episodes to watch. You know, if it's Halloween and you want something spooky going on, listen to that, and right afterwards, you and I are going to come back with our own picks.
Okay, so let's jump to our guests.
And with us today is one Kim McInnes. Flying in from Calgary, Alberta, you are going to tell us about maybe the best episodes to watch on Halloween, Kim.
Best episodes? I was looking more at what scared me.
Well, you know, like kind of
creeps me out. I think is
stuff that's good for Halloween.
Okay, yeah.
Cost of living, right?
Yeah. I don't know that episode, but the general cost of living is very scary.
It involves mud baths, Alexandra, and Mount Sanatorium.
Oh, okay, yes, no, not that's a different type of creepy. I tried to branch away from those creepies. Yeah, I was gonna start with night terrors.
Mm. Yes.
Good choice.
Because the body's all sitting up in the morgue, just done. That's, no, I'm good.
That's the scene that gets me every time. Yeah. Anxiety inducing.
Yeah. Especially because you can just hear the movement in the background. You're like, oh, something is not good. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you watched TNG as a kid, right?
Yeah.
Now, do you remember watching this episode when you were young?
Specifically, no. Just that it creeped me out. I wouldn't remember.
Like, was that moment where those bodies are sitting upright? Like, did that torment you as a kid?
I wouldn't say torment. I mean,
did you sleep again?
No. It was not that bad, but it was definitely just a kind of a thing.
Like, Kim, I know you've mocked me for talking about
my
experience, you know, as a child, but this freaked me out as a kid, for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I
think it creeps me out as a grown-up still, you know?
Like, I remember there was an episode of Different Strokes where there was, like, a ghost, and it tormented me as a kid, watching that when I was, like, I don't know, 6, 7 or something like that. But this did not have that impact on you.
No. No, I remember a movie called Monster in the Closet that stuck with me a lot. I could never figure out if you close the door or open the door.
Now, so when you revisit Night Terrors now, I'm sure you've seen it over the past handful of years. Does it still last week, there you go. Does it still have the impact? Like, do you still hold it up as like a scary episode?
Yeah, it was still creepy. Yeah.
Nice. Right. Okay.
Well, that's why I tried to look at the clips again to see if it was just, you know, from back in the day. No, these sort of hold up still as creepy.
Will you be watching it this Halloween?
Possibly. I don't know.
Okay, well, what's your second pick?
Schisms.
Mm.
The clicking noises. Just the it, yeah.
Kim, the interesting thing is, and we've pointed this out on the show before, though, the writers weren't really happy with the look of the aliens, but I thought they were incredible. Like, just so creepy to me.
Yeah, they referred to them as, like, looking cheap and just, like, fake looking.
Yeah.
They didn't even need to show up, quite frankly, you know, because they just heard it and they'd be lying on the table and you could just hear it in the background. Like, if they had never shown them, would have been fine. What they looked like made never mind to me.
Of course,
it was just the creepy noise.
Schisms is the episode in which aliens are kidnapping crew members and doing medical experiments on them. It's very much a kind of an alien abduction story.
Yes.
Yeah, and what's really fun about this episode is that Star Trek hadn't really done, like, a alien kidnapping story. And it was fun and interesting to me that the way they chose to do it, despite Star Trek being really optimistic, was in the most horrific way possible.
Yes. Wow.
Yes.
Very effective. Two episodes. Like, stuff that would freak me out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kim, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, with us today is Jesse Oquendo, flying in from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Thanks for coming on the show.
It is my pleasure to be here.
Now, Jesse, when we think about scariness, Star Trek, name an episode that comes to your mind.
I've never thought of any Star Trek as ever scary.
Really?
Really.
You've never seen The Cost of Living?
I've seen it, but they're scary as in cheesy, and then they're scary as in, you know, Stephen King.
So you wouldn't say, like, Star Trek, because there are a number of sort of horror-themed episodes.
There's horror.
None of them really ever, for you, kind of hit that primal chord.
No.
Really? Okay. No.
Well, he's got a rock-hard outer shell. What can I say? Yeah.
We're just cowards. We're like Shaggy.
you are.
Yeah.
So, Jesse, what is your pick? Like, what is the episode you think, while none of these are maybe scary, what is the episode when we come to Halloween episodes that you would recommend to the listeners?
The Haunting of Deck 12 on Voyager.
Right. Yes. Just for listeners who may not remember, what's that one about?
Let me read my... No. So it's... They're entering into a nebula, and the ship kind of just starts to shut down. And Neelix grabs all the little kids into...
That is terrifying.
I know that.
And he starts gathering them like a old-time, like, camping story.
Right.
You know, this is not for the faint of heart kind of stuff. And as they're going into that nebula, just weird stuff starts to happen in the story.
With Neelix?
The children?
No, not with Neelix and the children. But apparently this nebula has some form of aliens that talk through the ship. And recounts the story of what's happened and how they were going to get destroyed, and Captain J-Wing's actually bringing one of theirs back into the nebula in order to avoid the ship being destroyed. Mm-hmm. And it's scary just because it's really, because everybody's in the dark and doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, Jesse, I want to appreciate you coming on the show and pretty much confirming that you will be dressing as Neelix for Halloween this year.
I will be Neelix.
Now paddling in on his canoe from Anchorage, Alaska, is Stefan Estanilo. Stefan, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me again.
So, Stefan, I'm just curious. When you're thinking Halloween and you're thinking Star Trek, maybe what's an episode that comes to your mind?
Well, the first obvious one I thought of was Cat's Paw, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the Halloween episode.
Does it scare you?
Maybe in ways that it didn't... There wasn't their intention.
Those little rod puppets at the end.
Yeah, no. But my other one, the other one I thought of was In the Flesh from Voyager.
Okay.
We're talking about like the Species 8472 episode.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
What is it about that episode?
Well, what makes me think about Halloween about that episode is that's the one where the where Voyager finds that space station of 8472 and beams on board, and Chakotay finds that. It all looks like Starfleet Academy.
Yep.
And it's all Species 8472 preparing for an invasion. And so they're basically costumed like humans.
Kind of Stepford Wives or Invasion of the Body right. Snatchers-esque, you know, kind of humans in disguise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So creepy. They dress up. So that's my Halloween pick.
Now, interesting. While you're here, I want to ask, how did you feel as this is the sort of the resolution to the Species 8472 storyline?
How did I feel about it as a resolution?
Yeah, because that is the last time we see Species 8472.
I hadn't really thought about that.
Were you satisfied that this is their conclusion? Yeah.
I don't think I cared about them that much. Like, I didn't really care.
Did you find them scary?
Did I find them scary?
Yeah.
No.
No, okay.
I was sort of more sad about this is one of the last times we see Boothby, right? If not the last time.
Well, what about Chakotay in the fight?
Well,
I think that's
right.
Before.
Yeah, that's after, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, is it?
No, yeah, the fight is beforehand. Yeah.
Oh, so this is the last.
I want to go back to Cat's Paw for a second. Like, Cat's Paw, is this an episode you've watched many times?
No. The first time I ever saw Cat's Paw was a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I'm deliberately watching through the series right now, and I passed through that one recently.
And Cat's Paw has a certain amount of hype because it was, you know, intended as the Halloween episode. Did you feel it lived up to that moniker?
You know, I actually wasn't disappointed in it as much as I thought I was going to be,
mm-hmm.
because I'd heard all these things. I know Denise Okuda had said that she doesn't like that episode.
Right.
And I've heard that it's just this really campy Star Trek does Halloween thing, and I didn't think it wasn't as bad as I expected.
Well, it's a glowing recommendation.
Yeah. Well, Stefan, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
See you next time.
Gliding in on her Pegasus is one Shelley Ross here from San Francisco, California. Shelley Ross, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thanks. It's about time, huh?
You've had your many an opportunity that...
When?
We won't delve into the rich history of...
You, I mean, not asking me to be on the show.
No, we've asked you. You just didn't do your research.
I walked down the street screaming like a lunatic at your podcast. With all the things you get wrong.
What? Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, maybe you can correct us then. What are your Halloween picks?
My first one is Remember Me.
Okay, yes, the Crusher episode.
Yeah, what? I find things that mess with your head a lot scarier than things that are like haunted house kind of stuff.
Kind of the
psychological stuff gets
versus
to me more.
The physical
right.
threats. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I just watched that recently and it freaked me out again.
Of course, Remember Me, that's the one where the crew starts disappearing and Crusher's the only one who recognizes that.
Yeah, and I was really impressed that as a doctor she can run everything on the ship. I'm like, boy, they must have to learn an awful lot at Starfleet.
Yeah, I do like how eventually we do see Crusher, you know, in the captain's chair, so she knows what she's doing when it comes to running a ship. For
yeah,
sure.
It was impressive.
Yeah.
And we got some Traveler.
Yeah, that is scary.
Yeah, nothing says Halloween like the Traveler.
I get it. You know, those three fingers.
Ben Young, you know, still can't sleep at night.
Cam, is this an episode that you find scary or more kind of atmospheric? Like, it has a certain tone to it that I think is effective.
I think so, too. Like, actually, that never really occurred to me was for Halloween to pick more atmospheric or not necessarily atmospheric, but more psychological horror. I tend to go, I'm not as smart as that. I just go really in your face. But this is a good one, and you know, actually would make maybe a good double feature with like Frame of the Mind, with Riker right. having the breakdown. Well, so Shelley, I'm curious, what is your second pick? Does it line up with Remember Me?
Yes, it's Future Imperfect.
Okay. Now, what is it about Future Imperfect that stands out to you?
It's another psychological one where Riker thinks he's 16 years in the future and everything's different, and bit by bit it's revealed that it's actually not, what he's experiencing isn't actually real.
Right. Again, very psychological.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what is it that maybe stands out more for you, Future Imperfect, than, like, Frame of the Mind, which is, you know, the Riker and the Alien Asylum episode, which a lot of people cite or is referenced, I would say, more than Future Imperfect?
Probably because I just watched Future Imperfect not too long ago.
And was it, like, for both of these, were these episodes that you remembered, say, watching back in the day that have had, like, kind of a long-term effect?
No.
No?
The one that I remember from back in the day, which I don't find scary because it's now, like, my favorite original series episode, is The Man Trap.
Oh, okay.
I remember the first time I saw Creature in 113 freaked me out.
You're not into salt vampires?
I love her.
All right.
She's phenomenal.
Would you ever dress as a salt vampire for Halloween?
I wanted to, but somebody beat me to it at the convention, and I could never do it nearly as well as they did, so I gave up on that idea.
That was a very good costume. Yeah. And I met that woman who played the salt vampire.
She was spectacular.
She was delightful.
That mask was amazing.
Yeah. So, okay, well, thank you so much for being with us today, and I think we just need to thank all the guests for really giving picks that weren't obvious.
Yeah, I appreciate all the insights that our guests can provide. Cam, name one episode, and I'll name him one episode, and then you name another, and I'll name another.
Okay, well, I've talked in the past about my lifelong fear of leeches.
Yes.
Born out of, we had a cabin up that we would go to every summer. The lake had the occasional leech. Not many, but one never ended up on me, but it did end up on a couple friends. And just seeing it traumatized me, and it was something I lived in fear of for, I guess, you know, 15 years of my life. And so whenever Star Trek has anything to do with leeches, that hits me right, you know, in the worst primal chord possible. So I think the first one I want to talk about is Phantasms.
Okay.
This is, first off, just a great, like, atmospheric horror episode where, again, psycho callback, you have, you know, Data stabbing Troy in a turbo lift. You have all this creepy imagery of, like, the Troy cake, Crusher drinking Riker's brains. It's just very nightmarish, has a lot of atmosphere in a way that TNG often doesn't.
Yeah, I definitely think it's very effective at recreating kind of what it's like to dream in a very sort of frightening, nonsensical kind of way. And I think Patrick Stewart did a good job directing that one.
Very surreal episode.
Yeah.
And ultimately, when we get to the cause of it all, it's like awful parasites stuck to everyone, which is like, oh, just take something that's already unsettling and just amps it up to 11 for me and just gives me the full body cringes.
Yeah. My first pick here is going to be Night Terrors, again, another Next Generation episode.
Right.
All you need to see is Crusher freaking out over the bodies as she turns around and they're all, you know, the cadavers are all sitting up. That was one that gave me chills growing up as a young viewer. To this day, I still had kind of a visceral reaction, like, oh, hey, this is a creepy episode here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Cam, what's your next pick?
My next one is Realm of Fear.
Oh, another...
Barclay's terrified of the transporter, and we find out why at a certain point. With the most horrific image in the history of Star Trek.
Yes.
It is awful. Like, you know, people are obviously will often comment on the episode Conspiracy, in the exploding head and what have you. I'm sorry, that has nothing on this horrible, godforsaken creature that reveals itself in the transporter.
There is something just a little visceral about them having to make these creatures as opposed to just relying on, like, CG sort of elements there that could have been more cartoony.
Yes.
This was, yes, a very frightening sight.
When you see it, like, coming, like, it's just awful. So, like, you know, props to the people that made those creatures because that is a nightmare, you know, brought to life.
Yeah. You know, for my final pick here, I'm going to stick with Barclay. Spider Barclay, as featured in Genesis. That
pick
gave me scares, and nothing was better than watching Worf shoot venom out of his mouth and then turning into, like, this giant arachnid character who would chase down Picard. I think this is probably my favorite Halloween episode to watch. Just scariest episode, in my opinion, when it comes to Next Generation.
Now, we both picked Next Generation episodes. Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I just wonder if they went and literally tried to make, like, scary episodes more than any other series. And yeah. Maybe because they did, they hit it out of the ballpark more than once.
Yeah, I mean, I mind other series looking for scary stuff just for this episode. And, you know, I looked at, like, Dead Stop in Enterprise, which sort of has a little bit of a haunted house atmosphere, but it's ultimately, like, technology run amok. And it's not, like, that sort of creepy, really primal terror that these episodes had and, you know, the best Star Trek scary episodes that some of our guests mentioned have.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I think on that note, this assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Well, we are going to look at Star Trek's more controversial characters, you could say that. And look, it's not going to be any disrespect to any actors involved or any of the writers, but just a whole bunch of different elements here. The episode Cam, I've been putting off saying it, but it's called Star Trek's Biggest Losers. So just think about some of the more...
Are we on there?
Yeah. We're doing the podcast all about us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just think about some of those characters that have popped up in Star Trek, and maybe there are fewer redeemable qualities about them than you'd find in other characters. For whatever reason, they just don't quite work out, and you think to yourself, oh man... What a loser.
I think that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
Okay, you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Wolf in the Fold, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's REPORTONN, as in Neelix's Campfire Stories.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed!
Complete.